ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय पुंसं श्लाघ्यतमं मन्ये दण्डं अर्हतमार्पितं यं न माता पिता भ्रात्रा सुहृदाश्चरिषन्तिः पुंसं श्लाघ्यतमं मन्ये दण्डम् अर्हतमर्पितम् यं न माता पिता भ्रात्रा सुहृदाश्चरिषन्तिः from some of men, Shlaghyatamam, the most exalted, Manye, I consider, Dandam, punishment, Arhatama Arpitam, given by you, the Supreme Worshipable Lord. Yam, which, na, neither, mata, mother, pita, father, bratra, brother, surida, friends, cha, also, adishanti, offer, he, indeed. Translation. Although a father, mother, brother, or friend may sometimes punish one as a well-wisher, they never punish their subordinate like this. But because you are the most worshipable Lord, I regard the punishment you have given me as most exalted. Purport. Punishment meted out by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is accepted by the devotee as the greatest mercy. Tatenukampa Shushamikshamano Bunjana Evatma Kritam Vipakam Hridvagvapurbhir Vidanan Namaste Jivetayo Muktipade Sadaya Bhak. One who sinks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions due to the karma of his past deeds, who engages always in your devotional service with his mind, words, and body, and who always offers obeisances to you, is certainly a bona fide candidate for liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. The devotee knows that so-called punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is only his favor to correct his devotee and bring him to the right path. Therefore, the punishment awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to even the greatest benefit awarded by one's material father, mother, brother, or friend. So, just like to read from the purport to this Bhagavatam verse that Srila Prabhupada is quoted here. Purport. Srila Sridhar Goswami explains in his commentary that just as the legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from the father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the Personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word su-samikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him, just turn it down a little bit, he gets that tomorrow morning. It's probably better.
Sound effects.
Hare Krishna. Yes, good. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is, rather, the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotees to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord within his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardships a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Dayabhak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure, Lord Krishna, without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. So this pastime of Bali Maharaj here, and it is very instructive for the devotee. Because in this world, then, we're going to come across so much difficulty, so much disturbance in the performance of our service. And so then, the reason that for us, it's generally we see that it's a disturbance, is because of our particular attachments. This purport very, very clearly explains the whole, or solves the problem of that a devotee, one chanting of Hare Krishna, and all sinful reactions are removed. But at the same time, we see that the devotee appears to be suffering from sinful reactions. So here then, Prabhupada, this is Sri Goswami, it's very nicely pointed out that the material world has been created simply for the purpose that the living entity gives up his attachments to this place and again takes up his natural position as servant of Krishna. We have left that servant service because of our thinking we are the enjoyer. So because of this mentality, we have come to the material world to enjoy. And so this enjoyment mentality actually is what keeps us in this material world. The idea of that we're bound or we're liberated is actually a mundane conception. Because the soul is completely free. It's neither bound, so therefore if it's never bound, it's never liberated. The living entity thinks he is part of the material world, therefore that mentality we call bondage. But actually the bondage doesn't actually exist because the soul is eternally pure. It's eternally the servant of Krishna. But he's in the mentality, in this dreaming state, that this is real. The dream in the material world is real. So therefore it's called bondage. And waking up from this dream, then we call his liberation. Though he hasn't been liberated, he is always on the transcendental platform. But he thinks he has become polluted. So because of this mentality, then this material world has been created just for this idea that we are separate from Krishna, that we are enjoyer. So in this world, then persons perform activities. The activities that we perform for the purpose of gaining enjoyment, then especially improper enjoyment, but even if it's proper, then we find that this mentality then created a situation in which we try to endeavor to get the result. Means you perform a sinful activity. Means there was a sinful mentality first. Then to attain that sinful desire, then there's an activity you do to get it. So we get punished for the sinful activity. But actually, the punishment is meant to correct the sinful mentality. That's actually what it's for. But in this world, people generally think the activity itself is what has created the result. So therefore, a punishment that's connected to that activity, that will be the proper just reward for, you know, improper punishment. Therefore, the concept of prayaschitta is exalted, you know, extolled in this world as something very great and wonderful. But actually, it doesn't do anything unless it changes the mentality. So that means giving up sinful desire. Simply, you did something wrong, the thief took something, and then he's punished. If he doesn't change his mentality, he's been purified of the reaction, yes. I mean, somebody stole something. And then he's punished in a fit way. Then the reaction to stealing, he won't receive, because he already received it in the form of his punishment. But if he doesn't change the mentality, he'll again steal. Again, he'll get punished. And this will just go on and on and on and on until he changes the mentality. So if you change the mentality and understand that the sinful activity is not good, then that is better. Then that gives up the, you know, the sinful material endeavor. But still the difficulty is that we have to turn our consciousness to Krishna. Giving up a sinful endeavor is not enough. But because that will only purify you of this material existence. But one has to develop one's affection or love, attraction for the Lord. Therefore, this combination of tolerating the reactions that come and at the same time having appreciation that the Lord, He Himself, is taking care of all this, doing all this, that combination is important. Otherwise, we get the Stoics or the impersonalists who tolerate so many things, but they don't develop love for Krishna like that. Or if we tolerate or don't tolerate and we find we blame Krishna, then how will develop love for Krishna? So we see is that because the activity has a curative remedy for its performance, therefore when the devotee performs an activity that's improper, the cure for it's the same as for a non-devotee who performs the same activity. But the non-devotee is getting the reaction due to karma. But the devotee is getting seemingly a reaction, but actually it's just a correction by the Lord, because it's the proper thing, it's the proper correction. Therefore, for pride of so much wealth or this or that, because of that, then that improper behavior, with time, karma, one would lose one's wealth or lose one's position or these things. If you think it is me, it's wrong, because it's actually the Krishna's potency, his blessings that anyone, even the non-devotees, are in a position of have any power, wealth, fame, beauty, renunciation. It's him. So if they don't recognize that it's due to someone else's blessings, you know, they have to recognize at least something higher than them or something else. You know, they have recognized, because of my parents, their nice training, therefore I was able to, you know, have the determination, or because of the inspiration of my friends, or because of reading the various literatures about great heroic deeds, or, you know, from knowing that the devas, then they are able to award these powers, or like this. Something has to be there. So if it's towards the Lord, it's called pious. But it's still material. And if it's away from the Lord, you know, I'm the doer, I'm the this, I'm the that, then that's called sinful. So then the cure is, it must be progressive. So the cure for sinful is naturally going to be, is something that will correct the mentality. So for the devotee also, it's the same thing. But the devotee goes beyond this whole process because he understands as the potency of these opulences came from the Lord. Therefore, it's not considered pious, it's considered devotional. The Non-devotees stop short of this. Therefore, they're called a very pious, a religious person, because they acknowledge that their benefit is coming from something higher. But they don't take it the full step to understand that it originates in the Lord. That's called a devotee. So, to just be tolerant and patient and all, that's very nice. That's pious. That's very good. That's knowledgeable. But here we see is, you know, that one is going beyond this. Means by doing that, yes, then you can get so many things. Bali Maharaj, if he was just tolerant, that here is a Brahmin, and he is punishing him because of his, you know, not keeping his promise, then yes, he would be tolerant, and from that, then the wealth that's lost, you know, means he would gain. You know, he was, it's proper what he is doing. After, you know, suffering for having not fulfilled his promise. But here we see is that Bali Maharaj accepts that this is the Lord's punishment and is happily accepting this, knowing that because of my pride, because of my, you know, material, you know, illusion, therefore I have allowed myself to become entangled in all this wealth and position and power and all this. So the Lord, by as the kind, you know, out of his kindness, he has taken this away to just teach me that I shouldn't make this mistake. So because he's seen the Lord, we see the result is his suffering of the hellish reaction isn't hellish. And his gain of the reaction, natural pious reaction, is beyond pious reaction. He enjoys more than Indra. That's not possible on the material platform. You perform the activity to get the seed of Indra, you'll only get the seed of Indra. You won't get one fraction more. You have to perform more if you want to get more than that. But he has gotten more because devotion. So we can see that even though it appears the same as other personalities who were non-devotees, the reactions they get, we see still it's different. The devotee, by this process of seemingly suffering his reactions to sinful activities, simply it's the correction of his mentality, we see that he is glorified for that. The reactions, I mean, the results are much greater. You see the Pandavas, they lost everything. This is one of the anxieties when Dhritarashtra was explaining his anxieties to Sanjaya. Then he was pointing out from the very beginning, you know, the anxieties they had. When the sages brought the Pandavas from the forest and said that they were the sons of the demigods, from that point he knew his success as the emperor and his son's success was already finished. So then one of these anxieties that he had was Yudhishthir lost everything, had nothing, was sent to the forest, you know, for so many years and had to go through so much tribulation, and he came out on top. They were sent to Varnavata. They lost also their position, and then they got the alliance with Drupad and the daughter Drupadi, the most beautiful girl, most qualified as their wife, and her father is their ally, and he was very powerful. Drupad is very powerful. He himself defeated Duryodhana and his brothers, and Karna. He defeated all of them. And the Pandavas, they defeated him. Not only that, now he is their ally. And then Arjuna, he was sent out to the forest also, and he had nothing, and he came back with Subhadra as his wife, right? And not only that, that made the alliance with the house of the Yadus and the Rishnis. So you had the whole of Dwarka on their side, you had the whole of Panchala with Drupada on their side, and then they were sitting there in Bharat's kingdom, and then he was offered, the daughter was offered to Arjuna, he gave to his son, Abhimanyu, Uttara. And so now he was aligned with the house of Virat. All this, they were in calamity. They had nothing. They were finished. Anybody would have been depressed and lost their enthusiasm to go on. We see for kings, it's very common, very easy. Something comes along, and that's it, finished. Right? Krishna shows his universal form to Duryodhana after they tried to capture him and, you know, to keep him inside the earth so that they knew that Arjuna's strength was from Krishna. You get rid of Krishna, then Arjuna is weak, and then we can defeat him. But Krishna, you know, he manifested his universal form, came up out of the floor in this big form. And then Duryodhana, he was finished. That was it. No more. I'm not going to try. Shakuni has to. No. Some mystic power. Don't worry about that. He's a trickster. Everybody knows it's Krishna. He does these things. Don't worry about it. No. Then the Pandavas have nothing. They're in the forest with nothing. And then Duryodhana and Karna and that says, oh, we have so much. We have everything at Yudhishthira's now. Let us go to the forest and flaunt it. Yes, let us show, right? Right? That's the saying. If you have it, flaunt it, right? That's the saying these days. So, what's that? Flaunt means show it off very arrogantly, like that. So then they go to the forest, and then they have all their opulences, and when they come there, then one of the Gandharva kings, Chitrata, then he knows what's going on. So he comes and he fights with them, captures them and everything. And then the Pandavas, they have to save them, because they are relatives. Okay, maybe there's a fight, but when it's outside the family comes together, right? So that's the natural thing. And then when there's no problem from outside, then you can go back to happily fighting inside. But at least while there's some problem outside, then one does. So then the Pandavas came, and they defeated all the demigods and released them. That was it. Duryodhana was finished. He was ready to go to the forest and give up his life. You know, the other thing, he would just, okay, we won't bother trying to fight with them. Though, but this time it was like, I'm putting down the kusa grass, laying down, fasting till death. That's it, finished. And again, Karna, don't worry. It's something, time, you know, it does these things. Things happen. But don't worry, you're powerful. So we see is very easily they can become distracted like this, because the passion is so great that they want to do, and the opposite, if you can't get, then there's the opposite reaction. It's a natural thing of this mode. Is that the desire is great, but then there's an obstacle, immediately you don't want like that. That's a very, very common. So Dhritarashtra is then saying that they went through more than this, years and years, and not only they've lost everything, and still they come back and they're glorious and are enthusiastic and establish their kingdom. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, they come back. So what he didn't understand was that because they are devotees. So they suffer these things because they see it's the Lord's mercy. And during this time, their relationship with the Lord is more intimate, more wonderful. The surrender is greater, the reciprocation is greater. So they find much more happiness in this than even when they're rightly situated on the throne and all great opulence in that. Because interaction is more important than the facilities. The facilities are to create the happiness. One wants to be happy, so one gets the facilities in which to create that environment of prosperity for that happiness. But if you can get the happiness without that environment, why bother? Right? So the devotee understands is that this material world, no situation is ever given happiness. So if we get that reciprocation with the Lord and the Lord's devotees, that's actually valuable. And the other things, if it's there, nice. If it's not there, it doesn't matter. We have it, we'll use it for Krishna. If we don't have it, we'll remember Krishna. In any case, we're going to continue serving Krishna. So therefore, Bali Maharaj is especially glorified for this. Because the Pandavas lost the world, but Bali Maharaj lost the universe. Right? Not even just what's within the universe, the whole universe. Vishnu made sure it was understood he had lost everything. Right? Therefore, he took his foot and poked it outside the universe so that the Ganga came in. Because if he had stopped short of that, stopped at Brahma's abode, then they'd go, well, there's some space between Satyaloka and the top of the universe. Or, okay, then, you know, okay, he got what's inside the universe, but then there's always the coverings of the universe. He still has that. No, he took everything. Right? Not even up to the edge. Then he had to go past it. Right? This is standard. The Lord, you know, always expands beyond the universe to show he's beyond, but also show there's nothing left, right? Because if Viraja, you can't claim, right? That's spiritual world. That belongs to Mahavishnu. You know, so this side is gone. So he lost so much like that. And then we see his wonderful surrender. He offered his head, so body, his mind, his words, everything were his words. He's glorifying the Lord. His body he gave to the Lord, and his mind was always thinking and appreciating that the wonderful reciprocation and the care of the Lord. You know, even more than whatever the mother, the father, or even friends and relatives could do. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Arish, one of the values of pure devotional service is klesha. Mm. And I guess we could, it's in, like there is a crescendo, indicates that it manifests in the stage of sadhana. Now, I'm just wondering that kind of that interface between this aspect of the Vasuki and Kate from Sukshmiksamano and Kleshakni. Now in Dhanadhar Swami's book, he says that it fully manifests. Kleshakni fully manifests in Nisha, or maybe Luchi. But so that means no more suffering after we get through an Arjuna Vritti and no more material distress. It doesn't seem to line up with the experiences as reported to us by Shastra. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if you thought about this and how those work together.
See, the question is that here we're talking about that the Lord will give something, some suffering that looks like one's sinful reactions. The same time as Nectar Devotion then talks about when one takes up devotional service, one of the symptoms is kleshagni, is that the disturbances, you know, ariyatmata, aridaivika, and aribhautik kleshas, that's gone. That's removed. So how does that work? So he mentioned that Dhanadhar Maharaj is then given in his Ways of Devotion that it's at the point of nishta, one sees that. Below that, then, while there's still the anartas, there's still some problem. So one of the things that's very important to see, be clear on, is that it's also a mystical aspect, this thing of anartha nivritti and nishta. Because it simultaneously has a gross and a subtle manifestation. And because of that, sometimes there's misunderstanding of some of the terms and applications and why it's applied in one way, but we see that there seems to be a contradiction in another. Because anartha nivritti means these nine stages of devotion are characterized by what is the most prominent quality in them. But it doesn't mean that quality is 100% complete. So it's just like when we take up devotional service, the strongest thing in the mind of the devotee, or the at that point the aspiring, you know, he's not sure whether to take up devotional service or not, is his faith. Do I take up this process? Do I not take up? Where do I put my faith? So faith becomes the prominent thing. Though his faith is not, in no way can you compare it to a more advanced devotee. But it's the prominent thing in his mind. Or sadhu sangha, because then you decide, well, now I'll associate with devotees. I will take, and you're careful about learning how to do this and that. Though the quality of association will not be as high as a more advanced. Same like this, all the way up. So anartha nivritti means when the focus in the consciousness is how to get rid of these anarthas in the heart. And one is very careful to see at all moments what's happening, what was my motive behind that, why did I do this, why did this reaction happen to me. One is trying to understand one's actual consciousness motives and if there's sinful desires or even pious desire, whatever it is, you know, why, you know, Bali Maharaj here is very proud of his position. Though he's done everything properly. He's worshipped Guru. He's done all the things nicely. But he's proud of it. So therefore, that's the anartha. So therefore, it's called there. And then the stage after that is nishta, which means a steadiness. And so it's a border between having the anarthas and having great obstacles. And then the other side, which is very progressive, like ruchi, asakti, you have a taste. So you naturally go forward. It's no longer like a struggle. So it's a medium, it's like a sandhi, or it's like a neutrality between the two. It's come from, you know, fighting for Krishna consciousness to just, you know, just kind of like falling into it. But at the same time, we see the same thing happen again in its complete stage at Brahmabhuta. when the conditioned nature is given up, so that whole conditioned nature is called an anartha. Though the gross and even pretty much the subtle has gone by ruchi, but this still is where chanting, ruchi means I'm chanting because I have the taste. If I didn't have the taste, I wouldn't chant. Right? But the pure devotional service is a chant because it pleases Krishna. Like that. Naturally, because Krishna is pleased, I get a taste. But ruchi means I'm chanting because I get the taste, though it's connected to Krishna. But it's not considered as high as the others. So it's a very subtle thing. So those kind of things go at the Brahma-Bhuta, all those conditioned things. So it's again like a neutral stage. It's also like Nishtha, because now there is no material conditioning. So now one is fixed on the platform of the soul. So at Bhava, that's like, same like in Ruchi. I mean in Nishtha. So Ruchi is between basically the Kanista and the Madhyam, advanced Madhyam platforms in Kanista. And this is between conditioned nature and Prema. So it's both. So it's simultaneously. That's why sometimes it seems to have fit but doesn't. Like Raganuga, that it's applied at this Sunday. But you see, but there's a difference in application. The Sahajiyas then apply the application. Apply the process that is for the higher of the Sundays, Brahma-Bhuta, that they think of their spiritual form and try to render devotional service in that way. But they're not on that platform. They're on a lower platform. Well, then the Gaudiya Vaishnavas understand that that means that at that platform, yes, but at the lower platform of Nishtha, it means you can understand an idea of what kind of relationship you want, but you think of others doing it, not yourself, because you're not on that platform. You think of how Mother Yashoda is serving Krishna and the cowherd boys are serving in their great sense of surrender and all their nice pastimes, like that. So it's different. So the Raganuga here and the Raganuga there are different. So same way is that aspect of Anartha Nivriti is different. One is prominent, but one is complete, like that. We see also there, I think, Vishwanath then gives at which stages how much is complete of the process. So we see that when it gets to the higher, it's complete. And even then, within that, it's still called sadhana, bhava, because even there's some traces. There is no anartha, there is no sinful activities or mundane mentality, but there's still kind of the results from that. The mentality hasn't become completely pured. So therefore, then there's also the stages there of where one has to adjust with one's situation and become meditative on Krishna, but not think he's advanced. If he feels I'm advanced or I'm a great guru of Vaishnavas, he gets stuck in bhava and can be there for, hundreds of lifetimes. So he has to go beyond that. We see, therefore, the gopis, they got stuck also. Is when Krishna blew the flute, they couldn't go to the rasa dance. They got held back by their husbands, an obstacle, right? It seems like it's a natural thing of reaction. You're going to perform a sinful activity, leave your house and your duties and go out with another man. So naturally, the reaction is your father and brothers and husbands and children are going to say something. But it's not that at all. That was simply that they were stopped and then they gave up all material considerations. It says all pious and impious things that were, whatever traces were in the heart, were burnt up at that time. Therefore it said they left their body. They left the Sarup Siddhi is actually a mental form. It's a mental form that is pure enough to move in the spiritual pastimes. But it's not actually fully spiritual. It's like half-half. So at that time they gave up all those things, just the fragrance of the material existence that was holding them back. So that was burnt up, so that material overlay on the spiritual was then gone. Then all they had then is purely the spiritual form. So that's called Vastu Siddhi. So that form, then with that, then they could go to the Rasa dance, we see. Either that night or a few nights later. When was the next arrangement? Depending upon their perfection of that transferring from one to the other. So we see is therefore the kleshagni is basically, we see it goes away. Devotees in the temple, you see even the newest bhakta, basically most all miseries are gone. Therefore they don't worry about how they dress, how they deal, how they do the different things. And you know, it's always a very comic, even comical kind of thing. Even the non-devotees, when they draw cartoons of devotees, they always draw, you know, that brand new, you know, bhakta ecstasy, you know, out there with two colored socks and completely, you know, not aware of anything, because it's kleshagni. So much is gone, though something is there. So what's actually there is not material. So the reactions that we're getting, the obstacles we're getting, is not actually material. Krishna arranges it, though through the modes of nature. But because it's his hand, we don't call it a sinful reaction or a pious reaction. It's his hand in it. So the suffering actually is not like the non-devotees, because for them it's real. For the devotee, it's actually just the waking up from the dream. Does that make any sense? So it's very subtle. So we have to be careful that we don't perform religious activities to become free from anxiety. Otherwise, that's devotional service tainted by the mode of goodness.
Yeah, like in the Nagoya Pandandini, there is a rate of eradication of the anarchism. Mm. That's based upon the source of the anarchism, causes the anarchism. Mm. And like Vaishnava Bharat, there's still traces even in prema.
Yeah, up to prema. At prema, it stops. At prema, there's no traces of anything material.
I think I think Vishnu Chakra, at least the translation I was reading, that even, you know, it's there up until you go to the spiritual world, you know, so praying, maybe you're in the spiritual world when you're here, but
yeah,
I think
it would be just a touch generally below that, because at prema, then there's nothing left there. Because technically is that prema means you're a devotee, so devotee has all good qualities, so there's nothing there. Anything short of prema, actually, technically, you're not a devotee. You're an aspiring devotee, like that. So the point, generally, the vastu siddhi means that when one is situated in that properly, then that basically, technically, means that prema is there.
And if Prabhupada says in the items of Aisana, that should be the guiding principle for all devotees. Mm. I guess it particularly applies to those that are in Dharmavritti.
Yeah. It applies for everyone, because it's just like I remember one devotee met in Vrindavan, is that this devotee, she had three children. And then of them, I think it was the youngest, but whatever it is, the youngest was kind of like the most devotional. Very, very devotional, chanting, always reading, very nicely behaved. The other two were not as well situated. Then they were driving someplace in their car and they had an accident. No one in the car was actually even practically injured. But this child was killed. So then the mother was very angry with Krishna. How Krishna could have allowed this? I'm the devotee. You know, how he could allow this? You know, what is this nonsense? I'm performing my devotional activities. I'm doing everything as a mother and a wife and as a devotee properly. How could Krishna allow this to happen? But this is missing this point. Because we're attached, we're all these things. Who knows why that son is there like that? Maybe he only had 12 more years to, you know, perform in this way, or he had, you know, something he needed to be purified from so that he could move on. Some way, another, that this kind of situation was there. So then, when discussing it, and then the mother understood these points, and then there's no problem with Krishna, just it's the natural thing of the natural attachments and all those that, you know, take time to adjust with. But at least then she wasn't feeling Krishna wasn't behaving properly here. You know? So it's an important thing, because in our lives we'll see we're always running into problems. It's just the material world means problems. You know, it's like going to the bathroom. We can't expect it'll be a pleasant smell. You know, it's this bathroom means bad smell. So it's the material world means problems. So it's So it's expected that through all stages there'll be problems. But when it comes to another level, the problems aren't problems. Pandavas, it wasn't problems. You get even higher, you get to the residents of Vrindavan, it's not problems. The forest fire is not a problem for them. They remember Krishna. You know, the different obstacles, they had husbands and this, they're not problems. They're just ways to make them more think of Krishna.
Not really in the category of distress.
Yeah.
It's not like suffering.
Yeah, it's not suffering.
So therefore that applies more to the lower stages.
Yeah. Means you will consider it suffering if there's attachment. If you don't, it's a problem. So klesha technically means that you see it as a suffering. But if it's an inspiration, udipan, to remember Krishna, then it's not a suffering. It may be a devotional distress, but that distress is even deeper and more intense than a pleasant situation. Like that. Therefore we see Krishna himself comes to taste that disturbance, so-called disturbance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Ramachandra comes to taste that. You know, everything's going nicely in Dwarka, right? He is there, Krishna is there with his queens, everything's running wonderfully and all that. So that's one side of it. But then as Ram, he tastes the other side, the separation. You know? So like that. So Krishna tastes when he's with, Lord Chaitanya tastes when he's separate. So like that. So for Krishna, it increases rasa. So it's the same thing. It's just whether because of our attachment or mundane concepts, it's a suffering for us, or whether it's actually an inspiration for devotional service. So that would be like what you're saying, the levels of devotional service. The lower you are, you'll see it as a suffering. The higher you are, you'll see it just simply as a how do you say? A something to create remembrance of Krishna. Right? So it's like the twilight. Which is it? Night or day? You know, it's in between. So, yes.
You are wonderful creature, you started your class with surrender to Krishna. We usually say surrender to Krishna, to the Guru, to the authorities. Is the surrender applicable also, saying surrender to Krishna's government?
Krishna's government.
Which means, in other words, surrender to the signs of chastisement we are talking about. His signs of chastisement.
Yes.
Surrender to his system.
Yes. It means the surrender to Krishna's system. Basically, Lord Brahma, in a verse previous to this one that he spoke here, this Tate Nukampam, this is spoken by Lord Brahma after his chastisement by Krishna. Then he makes the point is that only by the Vedic culture and the Vedic literatures can one actually understand God and one get beyond this material world. All other things one can't do. So basically, if one doesn't accept Krishna's system, one actually can't get beyond material entanglement. Like that. So the whole, that's advised, is you accept the whole package. But the package can be accepted starting from any point. That's the thing. So to start somewhere, that's there. Start with, you know, God is supreme, or the Guru, or my other authorities, or parents, or someplace you start. Then from that if you can accommodate one, then the others can be accommodated. But you need to take the whole package. Like that. What time is it?
9:00.
Okay, so seeing that we have lots of encouragement from outside, then we will take this opportunity to Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Dhanita Gaudapati ki. Thank you.